This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. With me is our history doctor, Bill Smith. Bill, welcome back.
Glad to be back.
We are smack dab in the middle of the election season, the presidential election season. The Republican Party trying to figure out their nominee. Now, we're early in because this process has to go not just through straw polls, but caucuses and primaries. It's been a smorgasbord of possible candidates, real candidates coming and going. But the greatness of this process has been some of the eccentrics of its elections. Let's look back to some great primary and elections of times past.
Well,
do you have favorites?
I'm always a fan of the elections that happen in the 19th century in this way because they give you some of the most colorful names and some of the most interesting circumstances. You know, people have their fun with Al Gore as being some sort of perpetual loser, but he's truly one and done. There's nothing like some of the 19th century candidates. Rufus King.
Rufus King. Sounds like an R&B artist from the 50s.
He does. Charles Pinckney's 1804 and 1808 VP pick loses both times. Goes on to run on his own in 1816 and manages one of the greatest defeats in American political history, polling only 30% roughly against James Monroe. So, you know, I mean, when you want to go for loser types, Rufus King is a leader. And to make your analogy whole, you have to sort of go with in 1808 his vice presidential opponent was George Clinton.
Oh. Okay.
So, you know, the king of Funkadelic
right.
going up against Rufus King.
So those 19th century elections had some characters.
Oh, they did. You know, they also had some interesting results. The most odd candidate of all, I think, is 1820. James Monroe runs unopposed.
For the presidency.
For the presidency.
That's unbelievable now.
Exactly. But he did not get the unanimous Electoral College vote, as William Plummer, a New Hampshire politician, he had been the governor, refused to vote for Monroe. Now, it wasn't to preserve the George Washington tradition of being the only unanimously elected president. It's because he genuinely felt that Monroe was a terrible president and John Quincy Adams would be better.
Well, Monroe.
So one vote
okay.
against.
Monroe cannot claim a unanimous victory. It's still hard to believe that someone, and that was in 1820. It's hard to believe, even in 1820, that there was no opposition for the person running for the White House.
Well, that's okay. We'll make up for it in 1824, the next cycle in which there'll be a four-way race. No doubt one of the most fun elections in American history.
You've always had this odd idea of what fun is. Tell me about 1824.
Well, granted, you had a situation in which there was one dominant party. Yet they managed to have four candidates.
That makes me feel good, actually, for some reason.
See, the Federalists have collapsed at this point, and the Democratic Republicans, not to be confused with the modern-day Democrats, are Republicans. The Democrat Republicans had split over their presidential candidates. The respective wings would back A, the sitting president, B, an upstart from Tennessee by the name of Andrew Jackson. These two wings would pick the same vice presidential running mate candidate in John Calhoun. Two other Democratic-Republican factions favored separate tickets. One had Henry Clay for president with Nathan Sanford as his vice president. And another group, which eventually in time will become the Whigs, banded together behind John Quincy Adams. And they chose William Crawford with Nathaniel Macon as their ticket. So there's your four tickets.
Okay, anyone who's had any bit of history knows we didn't have President Clay, we didn't have President Crawford. How did this all get sorted out?
Well, fortunately, we do have the 12th Amendment in play at this point, which is a result of the mess in 1800. So only the top three will go through. You know, it's sort of like a opening round elimination here in Survivor.
I was thinking the BCS in college football. Only three get to the main bowl game.
True, we've had our play-in,
right.
And Henry Clay is now out.
He's been voted off by the tribal council. Okay.
Yes. Unfortunately, though, when he comes back to the reunion, he gets to determine things because, of course, Henry Clay is the Speaker of the House.
If you wrote a movie in modern times with this kind of mess, no one would ever believe it.
No.
It would be seen as high comedy.
They would not.
Tragedy.
You would have to play it as high comedy because it is one of those times where truth is indeed stranger than fiction.
So Clay's out.
Clay is out, but now he wields the power to essentially determine who the president's going to be because as the Speaker of the House, he's going to steer a lot of this process. Now, Jackson had a plurality of the popular vote. He had a plurality of the electoral vote. And yes, while you are thinking there is a President Jackson, not this time. Because Henry Clay, who detested Jackson, aided by Adams and his friends, helped slide the process over to give the decision to the sitting president, Monroe. Now, what this will do, though, is because, obviously, you want to talk about great Al Gore moments. Not only did you win the popular and you won the electoral as far as plurality, not enough to be named president, but plurality.
Right. You had more than anybody else.
And then you're on the outside looking in. So that motivated Jackson's supporters to pull away, split the Democratic Republicans in half, and you will see the formation of the modern-day Democratic Party, which will see to Jackson's election in the next cycle. The leftovers moving over around John Quincy Adams and Henry Clay to form the Whig Party.
That was a seminal election in American political history.
It really was.
And that's the most unusual election in United States history?
Well, you know, we get some other great moments in the 19th century. This multi-candidate, multi-party mess is going to get replicated several times in the 1800s. Of course, you know, 1848, 1856. You get the tumultuous 1864 way election, you know, that brings us Abraham Lincoln.
Right.
But you know, I have to tell you that, again, one of my favorites is 1872, which is Ulysses S. Grant's, I'll help you out there, re-election.
Thank you. His second term.
And why would that be at all interesting? Well, along with liberal Republicans that had bolted the party over the beginnings of realization that Grant's administration was corrupt and growing concerns about civil rights and the way Reconstruction was going, yet you have one of the most decidedly unprepared and politically inept major party candidates of all time, New York Tribune editor Horace Greeley.
Go West, young man?
Go West, young man, Horace Greeley.
Mm-hmm.
Greeley was the Adlai Stevenson of the 1800s, an intellectual, a thinker, but unlike Stevenson, not much of a politician.
Yet he's going to run for president.
Well, he managed a minor political career, but mostly in launching the Tribune as the voice of the Republicans, going back to 1860, he had gotten himself in a position of being somewhat of a power broker.
Okay.
He championed all sorts of causes, from vegetarianism to being one of the individuals that had signed a bond for the release of Confederate President Jefferson Davis. Nevertheless, his contrarian positions would now be dredged up against him in this race, and Grant will crush him. He is going to be absolutely thrashed, because not only is he the editor and publisher of the New York Tribune, that means that all those other New York newspapers are going to be out to get him, if for no other reason than sport and circulation.
But if this is a lopsided election that has a sitting president reelected, I don't understand why you call this an unusual election.
Well, because Greeley never ends up receiving a single electoral college vote.
Oh. Really?
How
does this happen?
Because he died. Between the popular election.
Okay.
And the Electoral College meeting, a series of personal disasters will beset Greeley. His wife will die shortly after the election. He will quickly fall into a depression, leading to a dementia and eventually his death.
Oh my gosh.
This is significant because his 66 electoral votes that he should have received would be just scattered among a series of live politicians.
So when the Electoral College convenes, they're not tied to a deceased person.
Well, actually, three of them tried to be.
Oh.
And Congress will invalidate those three votes because, of course, he was dead. So Grant essentially has a unanimous of sorts electoral college reelection because there is no opponent for these 66 votes to just be scattered to the wind and assigned to.
one of the most anticlimactic electoral. I mean, generally the Electoral College is an anticlimax anyway, but this one. I know that we call ours where history and not what would have been. But what if Horace Greeley, for some reason, would have won?
Indeed.
Then
we now have another one of these constitutional moments in which no one had really defined what would happen next.
Because it's not necessarily, I don't think it's necessarily understood that the second person on a ticket is
can
automatically
you be the presidential successor of a president who passes away before the Electoral College.
Yeah,
that's your question.
Yeah. Well, that's a topic for another day.
There's one more detail in this one.
Oh,
there's one more detail.
Well,
in this
Greeley's
one.
Dead. What else could there be?
Well, this is the race that also had the Equal Rights Party involved.
Uh-huh.
Their nominee was Victoria Woodhull.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Wait, women didn't have the right to vote yet.
Well, she was nominated for president, and Frederick Douglass was her vice presidential candidate.
I smell a movie script here. This is fantastic.
While no woman could vote for her, she was ineligible to be president.
Because she was a woman?
No, because she had not reached 35 years of age.
So you have someone who is too young, and she's a woman, and women can't vote, and her VP is Frederick Douglass.
Yes, but, you know, Victoria Woodhull, very famous for getting a lot of the women's rights movement rolling during this period, and a very famous individual of the time, but it's just one of those great footnotes of political history.
That is a great election. So, until you think things are getting really crazy, an election...
We're history.